So our last talk this evening for dinner is Greg McCalway. Greg is assistant professor of... Hello! Had your lecture in here? What's the matter with you? Professionals. So Greg is assistant professor of philosophy and religious studies at the College of Idaho. And Greg's talk this evening is titled Conserving the What? Mixing of the Problem of the Species of the Individual. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks. So first off, this is part of an article I'm working on, so it's easiest to just read it. But it won't be long, I promise, we'll be done for dinner. And for my benefit, I'd like to get a sense of how many of you are familiar with Mary Midgley, British philosopher, roughly? Mary Midgley, and Baird Callicott, environmental philosopher. Okay, that should help. For the most part, it'll be bringing out a bit of Midgley's value to animal ethics, but also in the process showing how Callicott gets things wrong, so everybody should be happy in the end. And you'll also notice some overlaps with some of our pieces today, which have been quite nice. All right. So this paper is really about Midgley, but I have to start with our old friend Baird Callicott. In his influential essay, Animal Liberation, A Triangular Affair, Callicott highlights what he sees as a conflict of conceptual frameworks between environmental and animal ethics. Callicott argues that there is an insoluble disagreement between the ethical individualism of animal liberation and the ecological holism of environmental ethics. For animal liberation, the individual is the primary unit of moral value that demands some type of equal consideration, respect, and or rights. For environmental ethics, on the other hand, the individual is valued for its part in the whole, and the good of the ecosystem or species is more important than individual animals, be they wild or domestic. Here, moral value is not granted to individuals by weighing its rights or interests against other individuals, but rather by determining its relation to the integrity of the whole system or biotic community in the heritage of the land ethic of Otto Leopold, Callicott's ecological prophet, I put in parentheses, or God, just to kind of take a jab. Among other things, Callicott is also concerned with the apparent failure of animal liberation to make appropriate divisions between domestic and wild animals, and he believes that wild animals in the biotic community essentially have much more value than domestic animals. This is especially important for him because wild animals should be prioritized and conserved. Domestic animals, on the other hand, are cultural artifacts that have lost their true animal nature and are more of a hindrance to conservation than actual valuable beings in any way. Eventually, Callicott sets out to bring the two fields back together, and I put that in quotation, a lot of finger quotes in this, right? Sets out to bring the two fields back together through the work of Mary Midgley and his essay, Animal Liberation and Environmental Ethics, back together again. And this is all connected to Segoff and these previous pieces that we've brought up already. Callicott here argues that a theoretically unified answer to the environmental animal ethics debate can come from a combination of Otto Leopold's biotic community and Midgley's mixed community. This is something of a, I'm sorry that my previous article offended you type of argument. One of those sorry, not sorry things that millennials would say. Callicott claims that the Midgley-Leopold biosocial moral theory fills in the gaps between ethical individualism and holism and solves the domestic wild animal problem that he previously saw as an insurmountable division between animal liberation and environmental ethics. This is because domestic animals, quote, are members of the mixed community and ought to enjoy, therefore, all the rights and privileges, whatever they may turn out to be, attendant upon that membership. Wild animals are rather part of the biotic community, and the duties, quote, and obligations of a biotic community ethic may accordingly be derived from an ecological description of nature, just as our duties and obligations to the members of the mixed community can be derived from a description of the mixed community. Therefore, Callicott concludes that Midgley's mixed community, and this is important, applies to domestic animals, and Leopold's biotic community applies to wild animals. So, in the end, each member is valued as a part of its respective whole, mixed or biotic. It is nice, tidy, clean, and unified. However, in this effort to bridge environmental and animal ethics, Callicott misunderstands and misapplies Midgley. Anyone who has read Midgley will understand how resistant she is to nice, tidy, clean, and unified system building. Because Midgley gets too many things wrong, or excuse me, because Palicott gets too many things wrong with Midgley to cover in this short paper, I will focus on his use of her concept of the mixed community. And I should note on the side that I'm currently working on an introduction to Midgley's thought with her as a collaborative book project. So I know more than Palicott about this. Okay. So what is the mixed community? Midgley opens her first book, Beast and Man, with the oft-quoted line, "We are not just rather like animals, we are animals." This simple yet vital premise is central to her work and has important implications on our moral thinking. We are, of course, embodied social animals navigating a morally complex world fraught with conflicting values and claims. We also share a social and ecological context with the multitude of non-human animals. For Midgley, this context and connection with animals in the natural world is often overlooked and neglected, though it should ultimately hold an important place in our discussions of ethics and animals. The concept of the mixed community, which Midgley elucidates in Animals and Why They Matter, is an especially valuable description of this context and connection with animals. When Midgley wrote Animals and Why They Matter, animal ethics, and this is in the early 80s, had emerged as a new burgeoning field in philosophy, and animals were receiving more attention in ethical theory. Midgley joined this conversation, as she often does, to set a few things straight and to help us primarily to think more clearly about animals in our moral deliberations. As such, much of Animals and Why They Matter is relatively destructive, as she puts it, with the purpose of critiquing and dismantling inconsistent, incoherent, and misguided thinking about animals. As such, she is primarily concerned with the problems and inconsistencies of hyper-rationalist thought on animals. There's a lot going on there, but in short, she is critical of those who one-sidedly exaggerate the primacy of reason to the neglect of other important variables in human life, including human life and morality, including emotions, relationships, sympathy, compassion, etc. You know, those things. While this critique runs throughout the book, a more constructive portion is spurred by her examination of species and the species barrier, arguing that both those who marginalize and those who exaggerate the latter are equally off the mark. The species barrier is real, important, and should not be marginalized, but it should not be over-exaggerated. And Midgley's discussion of this, of why this is the case, is where she develops the core of this mixed community concept that I keep talking about. The species barrier, however real and important, is also semi-permeable, allowing for animals of various species, including humans, to impressively interact and live together. All human communities have involved animals, she observes, and it is one of these special graces and powers of our species not to ignore others, but to draw in, domesticate, and live with a great variety of other creatures. This shared sociality and connection between humans and other animals is the foundation that makes the mixed community a historical fixture. Though animals may not be persons in the strictest sense of the word, as members of the mixed community, they are certainly fellow subjects, not objects. Our intersubjectivity, sympathy, empathy, and shared sociality with animals all highlight a direct capacity in humans for attending to and to some extent understanding the moods and reactions of other species. In this context, in which our lives and very language are reflective of our coexistence with animals, historically, biologically, etc., most of us are imprinted by interspecies sociality from a young age, which I think the children's literature is a great example of that. Ultimately, we can recognize that the world we live in, socially and ecologically, is not an exclusively human one. This gives rise to the mixed community, but also, by extension, connects us to the wider world. What develops for Midgley is a comprehensive approach to an array of complementary and interrelated ethical issues. Discussion of animals runs quite seamlessly into issues of gender, social justice, ecology, family, and politics, and the list goes on. They're all tied together as things that matter to us and are central to our lives. The mixed community is a way of understanding the significant place of animals in our lives. Animals are indeed one of the many important components of our value systems that we constantly weigh and prioritize as we sift through the hectic and confusing array of conflicts we encounter. In this pragmatic approach to the variability of value systems, the parts relate to each other and to the whole. Priorities and values shift, social and ecological settings change, and the rules are constantly rewritten. We've seen great examples of this today. There are no easy answers, and it seems that no single ethical system can account for the diversity and unpredictability of moral issues that arise in these worlds. Those that claim to do so, Midgley says, ultimately mislead us, and Palicott dramatically overlooks this. We should not then simply plug animals into existing ethical systems that promise all the answers. We should see them in complex contexts, in the complex context of our lives on this planet and how they are related to us, how they essentially share this world with us. Animals, ultimately, animals have always been part, again, of human communities, and things are not parts of communities. There are broad ranges of relationships that we have with animals in this setting, and they do not necessarily stop at the traditional and often forced line between domestic and wild. Midgley would likely contend that varying contexts would make it difficult to discern this line even if we insisted upon it. Animals fall along a domestic-wild spectrum based on context. Dogs, feral cats, squirrels, deers, pigeons, elephants, snakes, chimpanzees, sheep. That's a long list. I'll add turtles and also anything else that we've covered today to this list to make it more salient. Differing relations and context determine where these animals land on the domestic wild scale. The terms domestic and wild are not especially helpful then as essential categories that preordain the moral status of animals, which tends to occur in polarizing approaches to animal ethics between individualists and ecological holists. This is where Midgley really complicates issues of conservation and where Callicott's usage of her really breaks down. Midgley does focus on domestic animals and discussing the mixed community, but community, connection, empathy, and sympathy quite simply do not stop there. And this is important. Her discussion of social and ecological claims in animals and why they matter is helpful in understanding her distinctions. Social claims are those that we respond to in our social communities, claims on behalf of something like sentient members. The claims of animals are not to be seen as the claims of machine or even the claims of equals, perhaps, but as social claims of fellow community members. Ecological claims are those we respond to in our ecological communities, of course, claims on behalf of non-sentient members. These include trees, forest species, and the biosphere as a whole. And we constantly weigh and prioritize these claims in our value systems, which is where we place what matters to us in relation to everything else, of course. Social and ecological claims are both important and reflect our connection to the whole, which cannot be a matter of moral indifference to us. Moreover, and more problematic for conservation, which is why this panel is very nicely named, there's not always a sharp discussion between social, or excuse me, a sharp distinction between social and ecological claims, or between mixed and ecological communities. She writes, "Our duties to swarms of very small or distant animals, or to whole species, seem to be partly of the ecological sort, yes, resembling in many ways our duty to plants, but they can also have a social element of response to consciousness. Essentially, we are responding to ecological and social beings. As such, it is important to view both within a ranged value system of priorities and claims, in which the social and the ecological are sometimes independent, sometimes continuous, and sometimes conflicting. Pragmatically navigating this moral terrain, as we all know, is more challenging than most ethical systems let on, and Midgley ensures that the complexity of these issues is not lost in animal discourse. Like most other issues, she makes conserving messier and more complex. In his effort to replicate the biotic community, Callicott misses the relationality in Midgley's project. Mainly, he misses the actual individual animals, which also presumably matter in conservation in some way. Callicott is focused on the supremacy of the whole and the subordination of individuals. Midgley, on the other hand, stresses the interplay of the individuals and the wholes, as well as the interplay of values and claims. Callicott essentially attempts to make the mixed community fit into a model of simple holism. Not only this, he exaggerates and bifurcates the distinction between domestic and wild animals, claiming that the mixed community simply applies to domestic animals and the biotic community applies to wild animals. This is more or less wrong. In discussing this with Midgley a couple years ago, her answer was, Midgley does not claim, this final paragraph, Midgley does not claim to have all the answers about issues such as conserving, and she's adamant about that, but her thinking lends us relevance, complexity, and common sense. She also offers us a more challenging set of questions than the either-or approaches of liberal individualism or ecological holism in dealing with animals, domestic or wild, native or invasive even. The individual and the whole each matter for Midgley. The one does not trump the other. I just had a flashback to the election. Should have changed that word. Okay, the one does not trump the other, and there is more complexity involved. Ultimately, Midgley makes the issue messier and more difficult. I contend that this should not move us to give up in frustration, but rather to work harder, and I always find this element of her work refreshing. Thank you.